Hey everyone, and welcome back to Pixel Mix, the Pick and Mix gaming podcast. As always, I'm your host Andy Wood, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
Well, howdy doodle do.
Howdy do. So, this week it's our Games of the Month special, and we're unpacking our thoughts on Unpacking. We're falling into the Forgotten City, and after the brutal murder of Games Club last week, we flee to Mexico to lie low in Forza Horizon 5.
We did Games Club dirty. Maybe we'll bring it back one day. I mean, we won't.
We won't, Josh. We won't.
Win back seem paid to that, though. I did end recording on that last week. I'd just start playing Win Back again, and just 10 minutes later went, what are you doing? put it away. Why are you playing more Win Back? You strange man.
I was almost slightly tempted to jump back into Win Back just for a minute, because when I did complete the game, something I forgot to mention on Games Club is I unlocked the fantastic 90s titled mode, Max Power Mode, which, you know, I just want to know what Max Power Mode is, but, you know, even that will not bring me back to Win Back. But, yeah.
Let me tell you, you don't play Max Power Mode, you strap yourself in and go for the ride.
Oh god, I in Win Back I'm not so sure you do, but maybe someone will find out one day on the tube probably. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I would normally say how's your week been, Josh, but obviously we are recording this only 2 days after our last one. I'm away from my house for about a week soon, so we needed to rush out this Games of the Month. But I don't know, how's your last like 36 hours been, Josh?
Well, they've gone disastrously wrong. No, they're fine. Oh, okay, I had a couple deliveries of the post, got myself some Kena Bridge of Spirits for the PS5. Might be able to crack that one out before the end of the year. Probably won't. Don't know why I keep thinking I'm going to. I bought Lost Judgment as well. Like, fuck, am I going to get around to Lost Judgment in time? What a waste of money. I also picked up that new Pokemon game, another game I probably won't play before the end of the year because I'm a big baby moron. But, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to playing them. I know those Pokemon remakes haven't been reviewing too well, but at the same time, I just want a boring basic Pokemon game. That's all I want. I don't want it to be crazy new or different, and I quite like the new chibi art style, so I'm okay with it just being a really by the numbers basic remake of a game I played 15 years ago. That's fine. That's all I need.
Yeah, you know, I'm very much similar to you here. I mean, first of all, I got the deliveries of Kena and Pokemon, but I got Pearl. I think you got Diamond. So Same sort of stuff coming in. I'm really looking forward to getting around to Kena, actually. I think it does look really nice. I've kind of heard those, you know, comparisons to like a slightly older Zelda game rather than the kind of more modern style. So that could be cool. And yeah, I'm totally the same with Pokemon. Like, I saw the reviews coming in, which are, you know, maybe like 5 or 10 points down from what a normal Pokemon would get. But then from reading the reviews, yeah, it seems like people are just annoyed that it's a faithful remake. And I'm kind of fine with that. Like, I fell off the last couple of Pokemon games because they just, I don't know, I just couldn't be arsed with all the extra stuff. You know, Let's Go added Pokemon Go style capture, which ended up winding me up eventually. And then, you know, Sword and Shield had a bunch of kind of new stuff going on, like the wild area, and they've got like DLC and all that sort of stuff. I'm looking forward to just picking up a simple ass Pokemon game, you know, with none of this extra like dressing around it. I just, you know, I won't play it. You know, I'm the same as you. There's no way I'm getting around to Pokemon right now. There's too many things. But if I do load it up, I imagine it'll eat away quite a lot of my time. So yeah, you know, looking forward to those. Other than that, my last couple of days have been fairly good. I obviously said on the last show that I need to stop playing Halo Infinite multiplayer because it's absolute death when you've got, you know, a ton of Game of the Year games to play, you've got podcast stuff to cover. Yeah, I played about 6 hours of Halo Infinite multiplayer last night, so that has not happened. I played like, you have to play like 10 ranked games before you get given a ranking. So I played all of those and just hammered that out. That was good fun. That game is really, really good. Obviously, we won't be talking about it on Games of the Month this time because we might as well wait until the campaign's out as well. But, you know, very much looking forward to that. Yeah, the only other story I have, which is just a complete tragic tale of my quest to get a game back that I bought about 2 years ago, which is I bought Roller Coaster Tycoon on my mobile phone. It was like a remake of the first two, and it was a good little game. It cost like £7 or something. Bought it a couple of years ago, had a good time with it, and then the developers, who are not a small developer, it's literally Atari, they lost the codes to the build of the game, which meant that they had no way to update it on the Google store. Like, this is something I know about because I've lost codes before, but not when I've released a game because I'm not an idiot. but yeah, so they lost the code, so they had to re-release it on the store as a new game, which meant anyone who had the game now was stuck with this buggy, broken version and can't get the new one. But they said, oh, send us an email, we'll sort it out, it's fine. So fast forward what I believe is now 28 months, Josh. and I've sent them an email about two or three times a year, being like, hey guys, it's been 26 months. Have you got that code for me yet? I'd quite like the code if you don't mind. And then amazingly, out of the blue last night, get a response from Atari support being like, oh, hey, sorry for the delay. Here's your Roller Coaster Tycoon code for the Google Play Store. I was like, what is this? How is this happening? Because I've actually kind of wanted to play the game for a while, but I cannot in any good conscience give them another £7. It just can't happen. So I was like, oh, thank God, finally. Put the code in Google Play, Josh. This code has expired.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, that's absolutely lovely. Somebody at Atari just trolling you.
Who knows?
That's absolutely brilliant. Do you think Jeff from Chicken Little development fame is actually now at Atari, heard the episode last night and just went, I'm going to fuck this guy up. I know who this guy is.
If I look closely at the code, it'll spell out like, fuck you, Chicken Little is the best. And I'm like, oh, God damn it, Jeff. Not
Chicken
you.
Chicken Little for life.
Forever.
Forever.
But yeah, so that's hilarious. So I got to instantly respond to Atari being like, yeah, code doesn't work. I guess I'll wait another 30 months. Thanks, guys. But just
that's
a
really
disaster.
Fun. Love yeah. that. I love the fact you're going to probably end up on like a Joe Lycett or Martin Lewis show in about 2 years' time, just with dark music behind you. I've been waiting 5 years for my Roller Coaster Tycoon.
I think at this point it's going to be like a deathbed situation where I'd be like in my 80s and my final words will be like, son, check the email account and if the code comes through, you can play Roller Coaster Tycoon Classic. just keep an eye out.
Lovely stuff.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, other than that, it has only been a couple of days, so there's not a lot of gaming news to talk about right now. So yeah, I guess we should just jump right into Games of the Month.
Okay, so here we are with our November Games of the Month special. We've got three games for you this time. We're looking to look at Unpacking and The Forgotten City, both of which launched into Xbox Game Pass a little earlier this month. And Forza Horizon 5, of course, another massive Game Pass launch. I think that's now had 10 million players pretty much from its launch date, which is quite impressive. Not bad going. We'll kick off with our thoughts on Unpacking, the charming little indie title, which kind of took the internet by storm briefly a little bit earlier this month, partly because it's such a relaxing, chilled experience, and partly because nobody knew what a GameCube was. So what do you make of Unpacking and also the cruel ravages of time?
Yeah, I mean, look, Unpacking is a strange one. I saw this game previewed quite a bit, and I know it had a lot of buzz around it. And then, you know, it came out to a ton of glowing reviews. This has a really high, average review score. It's looking in like the kind of high 80s. It might have even hit 90 at one point. So it's clearly got a lot of fans. My opinion before going in was, how the fuck is a game about unpacking going to be any good? You know, I've moved around. You know, I went to uni. I've moved to a different city afterwards and stuff. Like, nobody likes unpacking. Unpacking's awful. It's like, it's the worst thing to do in the real world. So I thought, I ain't going to enjoy a game about it. And yeah, look, you know, I jumped into this. I still kind of would say I can't enjoy a game about unpacking. I don't think I came out of this enjoying it, but I did come out of it kind of respecting a lot of what they tried to do here. I think there's a lot of good work in this game. There's a lot of really intricate detail and effort put into it. For what it's worth, you know, considering this is a game where all you do is unpack, I believe it's six or eight different homes you unpack throughout the game, and it travels through time from the late 90s to pretty much now. Like, that's all you do, and yet it does manage to tell quite an enjoyable little story with just little details around the houses and how things are placed and what's going on where. You know, it does a good job with that. Like, so I don't know, I have a lot of respect for the game, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's the most fun time I've had this year.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair appraisal of it, to be fair. I found the game to be absolutely lovely, very sweet, beautifully designed. The pixel art's gorgeous in this. It's so much care put into it. All the sound effects of when you place fins on different surfaces is wonderfully done as well. I think I read some of those like 14,000 different audio files or something, which is fantastically hard work, and you've got to respect that. I think it's a lovely little game, which is absolutely not for me. And that's just one of those unfortunate things, because this is very much a job game, really. You are doing the job of unpacking. As somebody who's moved, I must have moved 15 or to 18 times in my life. I'm always moving about. And yeah, unpacking sucks. Doesn't suck quite as much as packing. Packing is way worse than unpacking.
Yeah, don't make a sequel called Packing, please.
That would be a lot worse. They've definitely picked the better part of the moving process, but it's still a pretty miserable, pretty unbearable part of it. There is fun to be had here. It's incredibly chill. It is nice to, you know, put things out the way you want to, you know, make the room look the way you would like it to look. But unfortunately, just the very nature of how I play video games, I just stopped doing that after like the second level. I was just at that point, I was just throw it fucking anywhere. It's almost like it was actual unpacking at this point. I'd moved away from the tranquil, chill game that designed it. I'd just turned it to actual unpacking. I'll just shove it in a fucking room for 5 months and we'll get round to it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So it kind of lost its tranquility and ended up just becoming fairly stressful. And there are some incredibly stressful levels where you need to squeeze yourself into spaces which other people are already occupied. And I think those are actually some of the more interesting levels in the game. There's one, without delving too far, I suppose, where you move in with a partner and you need to get your stuff in alongside their stuff. And that's very difficult, actually. It took me quite a while to manage to pass all my stuff into this tiny little space. So it does some interesting things with its, you know, notion as well. But ultimately, it's about a four-hour game. And although I get why people love this, I genuinely do. I get why people like this game. I personally was quite happy to see the back of it.
Yeah, I ended up very quickly seeing this as a job. You know, as you said, it's a job game. I kind of got to the point where, like, you know, it'd be my lunch break at work and I'd be like, if I can, you know, I could just unpack that house now and that gets another one out the way. And then I can like unpack the other one this evening, maybe. I couldn't. I mean, I guess that's the thing, you know, in real life, like you don't finish unpacking and go, oh, I can't wait to move and unpack again. So like a game that is literally just unpacking 8 times isn't exactly going to, you know, you're not going to want to jump from one to the other. It kind of makes sense to maybe take a bit of time with this game and take some breaks between doing the rooms. I'd say that early on, I actually was having a fairly good time. I was the same as you. I was placing stuff where I thought it looked good. I was kind of making the room what I wanted it to be. But the issue is with this game, which it makes perfect sense for the narrative and for the how the game needs to evolve. But you start off basically, you know, I guess we can spoil the first room to an extent. You start off as a kid in a bedroom. So that's your only room. You're a child. And it's, you know, it's fine to work on that room a bit because it's your one space. But then as the game goes on, you're unpacking a whole house. And that's when the job game really started to get on me. And I was like, oh my God, like just an entire house of stuff to place. And you've got boxes in some rooms that have items for other rooms. Cause that's just what happens when you try and move house. You know, it's you've got a bedroom box, you open it, it's got a fucking toaster in it. It's just the way it works. So like you've got that to deal with. And it just does grind you down after a while. So yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one to rate for me, this. It really is. Cause I do think it's a good game. I think, you know, like we said earlier, all the audio files and stuff, they've put so much work into this. You know, you drop any item in one spot and then move it to the left slightly and drop it again. And it's got a sound that changes because it's now a slightly different, like, knock onto the ground and stuff. Like, huge detail. The artwork, as you said, is amazing. The pixel art's fantastic. I actually tweeted an image of one of the pixel art game boxes in this, because I mean, these game boxes must be about 10 by 10 pixels. Like, they're tiny. And it is a perfect representation of the Simpsons Hit and Run game box on GameCube. It's absolutely nailed on perfect. And it's like, it's a miracle that they've managed to achieve that with such a tiny little box. Like, it's so impressive, so great. Like, I my favorite part of this game was probably looking through those tiny little pixel game boxes and kind of figuring out which games they were and stuff. It was really cool. So yeah, look, lots of respect for the game. I think for the right person, it's a lot of fun. I would also say as well, if you are a kind of PC gamer, please do play this on Game Pass for PC. You're saving your achievements transfer over between Xbox and PC, and it is just so much more intuitive to click things with a mouse and put them down. Like, I got tired real quickly on console with using a controller for this game, so that's well worth doing as well. But yeah, look, I think this is good, and yet it bores me, which makes it hard to rate. You know, I feel like I'm gonna score it higher than my own personal enjoyment, which is maybe a bit hypocritical.
Yeah, I kind of fall into a similar sort of pattern with you here. I love a lot about this game. I think the environmental storytelling, as you mentioned at the top, is fantastic. It's really cleverly done. It's something that could only really be done in a video game, which is something I always appreciate. Mm. I always like when creators use the medium in the way that it can be. And, you know, the act of finding things which you had as a child, you know, seven moves down the line is genuinely quite sweet and touching, because we've all done that. We've all, you know, opened up a box and gone, oh, look, it's this thing. I've had this for decades now. And that's genuinely sweet and quite touching in a way that you probably couldn't do in any other art form. So kudos to them for that. And the story that it tells, although basic, although simple, is, again, pleasant. It's nice. You know, it's not got any dialogue in the entire game. The only actual words you get are the words which go underneath a photo album at the very end of it. And yet it tells a complete story, which, you know, which makes complete perfect sense. I remember there's a level where there's a picture and you can't put it up on a pinboard for a very obvious reason when you're playing it, and instead you have to put it in a drawer, sadly. And that's very clever. That's really quite sweet. I love that a lot. And then by that same proxy, later on, there's a room I should have been putting all my care into, but I was so sick of the game, I just threw it all in there. And I would have looked like the worst person in the world.
So, yep, you know, I did that.
And it kind of made me feel like a bit of a jackass as well, to be fair to it. So, yeah. It does work quite well in those things. As for console controls, I played the entire thing on a Xbox Series console, and it's fine. You know, it will be a lot better with a mouse, and because it just will be. It's just that kind of drag and drop sort of game. It will play better with that interface, but you can make it work more than well enough on a controller. I was never hugely frustrated with it. It probably limited the amount of faffing I was going to do with it being on a controller, because that's when the intricacies are trickier to do. And that's probably why a lot of the time I was just throwing it wherever it bloody landed, to be honest with you, because I didn't have the patience to be delicately moving the thumbstick and rotating it around to get it just so. It's not going to work for me. But as you say, looking through those game boxes, getting a GameCube, love the fact no kids on the internet know what a GameCube is. I think that's really sweet. I like that. As they shouldn't. They're young. They don't need to know all this boring stuff.
Yep.
So I think that was pretty cool, even though it did age me horribly. I like this game. I do genuinely like it, but at the same time, I have to give it an obligatory Game Pass 6 because I didn't actually enjoy playing it. It's a much better game than that, though. And if you're the kind of person who wants to play this, if you look at this game and you think, oh man, this looks really cool, this looks really chill, it might help me, you know, with anxiety or just something to, you know, take the edge off after a hard day at work or whatever you like to play video games for, you could easily give this an 8 or a 9. Even higher still, I think it's perfect for a particular type of video gamer. But unfortunately, it's not for me personally, although I do appreciate a lot of what it's doing, and I would recommend it to those who have an interest in it.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same as you. I'm going to give this probably the most, I guess in some ways, it's the most glowing Game Pass 6 that I've gave out, because yeah, I agree with you. I think for the right person, this is at least an 8 out of 10. You know, it does everything it aimed to do, and it doesn't do anything wrong along that path. You know, there's no mistakes or flaws here. It is the game it intended to be. It tells the story it wanted to tell, like, in a perfectly good way. There's nothing wrong with it, other than to me, it is a bit boring, you know, and that's just the way it is here. But yeah, so, you know, it's a 6 out of 10 for me, but I would strongly say, you know, like, just watch a little preview video of it, load it up on the store, and just let the you know, trailer play out. And if it looks like someone you'd enjoy, definitely do give it a go. It's probably better than we're making it out to be. And yeah, also for the people who don't know what a GameCube is, if you see a strange purple box that looks like it's got a handle on the back, that's a games console. Don't put it in your kitchen. You know, that's what you need to do. It's not a toaster. It's a games thing. But yeah, that's the narrative around that's been fun, because you've got a lot of people being so fucking grumpy about it. And it's like, why do you expect them to know? Like, what are you doing? Like, we only know them as like the machines we played with as like children. Or, you know, if you get older and get interested in the hobby more, maybe you'll look into ones in the past. But like, you know, if this had a pixelized like ZX Spectrum, I'm not going to know what the fuck it is. Like, I've not stared at that console as a child. It's crazy. But anyway, that's enough on that.
Let's leave the grumpy people in the past and talk about the past with the Forgotten City. So this is a famous Skyrim mod, which has been fleshed out and developed into a full-length video game, which was released earlier this year. I believe it was about May or June, but has since come to Xbox Game Pass, and it's a perfect Game Pass title, let me tell you that much, to kick us off. What did you make of this? I was quite apprehensive because, of course, I'm not a huge Skyrim guy, so the notion of a game built in the Skyrim engine put me off this big time, but it managed to win me round. You love Skyrim, so I imagine you was a... And a bloody hell, it's also a time loop game, so you're well and truly invested.
I mean, look, I'd start by saying I like Skyrim. I love Oblivion. I like Skyrim. But look, yeah, I almost nearly sent you a message to actually say to you, don't worry about it being a Skyrim mod, because this has no resemblance to Skyrim other than the fact that it's a first person game and, you know, you control it in that way. You know, at some point you do pick up a weapon of sorts, and that might feel a little bit like a Skyrim thing, but it's not. It's not at all an Elder Scrolls type adventure. Nobody should be taken aback from trying this one because of their kind of dislike for Elder Scrolls or anything like that. And yeah, as you said, obviously, yeah, it's a time loop game. I've been on record on our podcast throughout the last couple of years saying that Outer Wilds on Xbox is pretty much one of my favorite games of all time. Now it battles for the top spot quite often. So do love a time loop game. But this is another top-notch time loop game, man. I mean, I think it transcends whether or not you like time loop games, and it definitely gets past whether or not you like Elder Scrolls. It's a very clever game with a just genius little setup. Like, I love the concept of this game. I mean, for anyone who hasn't heard anything about Forgotten City, you basically start the game, you comically fall down a big hole, and you know, you wake up, basically you wake up on the end of a river. This woman has pulled you out of the sea, and she asks you to go and retrieve her friend who's gone into this cave. That's all she knows at this point. Go in the cave, fall down a big hole, and next thing you know, you're in this ancient Roman city, and you basically learn at that point that the city has a rule where if a single person commits a sin, then they all get murdered. Basically, everyone gets killed, everyone dies. So they're living under this kind of strangely strict, stringent rule system where nobody can commit a sin. But also, you know, it's your job to try and figure out who's going to sin. Like, apparently the leader of the city has some sort of information that somebody is gonna break the golden rule, they call it in this game. They're going to break the rule. It's going to kill everyone. So you're kind of there as a bit of a detective to try and figure out how that's going to happen. And yeah, I mean, I would say when I first like got told that mission in this game, I was somewhat concerned about it being a little overwhelming. You know, you come into this city, it looks beautiful. It looks fairly spacious. And you walk past quite a lot of characters on your way to meet the kind of leader of the city. And I was thinking like, oh, this is going to be a bit, you know, like, I'm not sure I'm in the right headspace to figure shit out like this right now. You know, I don't know if I want to play this another time. And then as you get into it, you realize actually, first of all, it's a intricately designed but wonderfully kind of contained city, for one. This is a quite a small area you can learn and explore very quickly once you understand it. And the second thing is the cast of characters is actually stripped down to a very manageable amount of characters. Like, it feels perfect in a way. They haven't overpopulated the city, you know, but there's enough people there that you've got a lot to learn and got a lot to think about. So I love that. And then going on from that as well, what I would say is really nice about the Forgotten City for people who maybe aren't feeling the, you know, they don't want to get a pen and paper out and start being a proper detective. Forgotten City very much guides you around the mystery. You know, you, as long as you pick a particular lead you want to follow right now, you can kind of rely on the game to give you a hand and kind of give you enough knowledge to push on in that direction. You don't necessarily need to make big deductions or solve big puzzles in Forgotten City. It's more, you just choose a path to follow and you let the narrative play out around you. And, you know, that leads you to discovering what's going on. And yeah, I love this game, man. I'll let you go for a bit, but yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this game a lot. I think, as you say, I think the setup is delicious. I love the idea that you're just a modern dude, stumbles into a big hole, ends up in this ancient Roman city populated by all of, what, 20 to 25 people. There's not many there. But at the same time, as you say, it's enough of the cast of characters to feel substantial without being overwhelming. That it's a perfect number, to be fair. It just about works for the game. And even these people, they're not all just from ancient Rome. Some of them are from different times, different, you know, ages, be Greek or all sorts of different nationalities are mixed into this city. So it's not just, you know, here's a bunch of Romans. There's some variety in it as well, which I appreciate. And it does very much tie into the lore and mythology of the video game. It does a lot of things right from those initial moments, because as you said, the first time you speak to the head honcho and you learn what your mission is and you just think, oh, Christ. This feels like a faff. Like that was my first thought. I like to think that was my character's first thought.
Oh, probably.
Can I just kill myself? I'm all right. But as you do start to just follow little leads and do simple things and, you know, pick apart different little elements of the game, you find you actually make progress very quickly in the Forgotten City. And it's does enough to guide you around without just completely telling you what to do. Sometimes objectives do go, yeah, you're going to have to figure this one out for yourself. But the chances are, if you're following a lead, you'll kind of stumble into it anyway. So it does enough to, you know, make you feel like you're actually piecing things together without literally just going, okay, let's just follow the markers all the time. So it does that quite well. It lets you, you might just stumble across a character halfway through following a lead and all of a sudden you might drop that completely and start following this person's lead. And that's a nice idea as well. And the thing which usually puts me off time loop games is the notion that, am I going to have to do this every single time I start a new loop? Am I going to have to go do this, then this, then this to get into the part? And the Forgotten City is very respectful of your time in that sense, because you meet a character early on who's just almost oafishly helpful. Like, he's just he's just stupidly helpful. It's so contrived and video gamey that I love it. And you could literally just walk up to him. He has no idea who you are because you start a new loop each time and nobody can remember you. And he just does everything you tell him.
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. He doesn't even question it. He's just like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll just do everything. And as you're carrying on your business, you can see him running around and doing each bit. I'm a huge fan of that. I love the fact that I can even see him just running, talking to each person, getting food, getting me back to the stage I was only a few minutes ago. I like that because any time loop game lives or dies by not making the endless loops feel painful. You know, you have to actually embrace and look forward to a new loop because you're going to discover something new. You're not going to have to do something old. And the Forgotten City does a very good job of balancing that, and that's probably its greatest strength.
Yeah, look, I'd agree massively with that. I think it's super important to time loop games to respect the player's time. You know, it's so easy to fall down the hole of repeating actions over and over. You know, it's the peril of roguelike games. You know, it's why they maybe don't do too well in our eyes. You know, you don't want to always do the same thing. And yeah, Forgotten City nails it, man. I mean, as well as the fact you've got this super helpful character there who, you know, is very quickly convinced that you already know what he needs to do all this stuff. You know, it's also got the fact that you retain any items and money that you've got when you start a new loop. And to be fair to the game, it makes some narrative sense. You know, if you stretch it thin enough, it makes some narrative sense. You can keep all that stuff between runs as well. So that's pretty cool. And that's just really helpful. You know, you might spend a loop, you know, acquiring like some money that you're going to need for a certain task in the next loop, or you might, you know, get a really useful item. And once you've got that, it's cool. You know, you've done it now. You've got it. You don't need to worry about doing that entire part of the game again, really, because you're sorted. And I would say as well, I totally agree. I love the extra detail that you literally see that man running around town doing the errands you told him. Like, you can walk behind him and he's going to all these different characters and having full dialogue with them, explaining that he needs to do this, and the other person will be confused, like, oh, how did you know about that? And he'll be like, you know, he'll mention that you told him to do it and stuff. And like, I love the detail, because it would have been so easy for a game, if they wanted to put less effort into it, to, you know, as soon as that character disappears from your vision, just tick a little hidden box behind the scenes that says, oh, he's done all that stuff for you, you know, don't worry about it. But yeah, you see him running around, and by the end of the game, once you've done quite a lot of leads, he's pegging about for friggin' ages. He's a busy man. He's a busy man then. He's got all sorts to do. And I just love that you can see that happening. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that. You know, I think quickly, very quickly touching on Outer Wilds. The thing Outer Wilds does really well with its time loop is that in Outer Wilds, you don't actually need to retain any items between, you know, any items or anything between runs. It's like anything you've done is something you've learned in that game, which is why that one works. Whereas to go to one that I don't think does it as well, which is a game I was fairly glowed about a month ago, is Deathloop. Whereas Deathloop actually does lead down a path of quite a lot of repetition. So I think Forgotten City is much closer to the Outer Wild side of this. It really does respect the player, and you actually do feel like all of your time is useful time. Whereas, yeah, Deathloop maybe not quite nailing it to the same extent. So that's I don't know, for a small team, like Forgotten City was only made by a few people, and we all saw how critically acclaimed Deathloop is this year. Like, for this to be up there, you know, in a situation where it might be the best time loop game of the year is a huge testament to them, because yeah, I think they've just done a fantastic job of it.
Oh yeah, I think this is a much better game than Deathloop. At least in its time loop elements, I think it does. Deathloop obviously does other things well. I mean, sure, the combat in Forgotten City is brief, but not exactly fantastic. But again, it's brief, so nobody needs to worry too much about it. The main hook of this game isn't combat or anything like that. It's literally talking to people. That's what. That's entirely its thing. You're here to talk to people, so the dialogue needs to be good. And it is, on the whole. To give it its due, it's actually a pretty well-written game. There's some interesting dialogue options. The characters feel true and believable on the whole. There's some really asshole characters, some really lovely ones, some nasty little hidden mysteries in within the bigger mystery which you need to solve, which are all satisfying and fun to come across. There's a mid-game twist, which is so clever, it made me cheer. I absolutely, the mid-game twist in this is, no word of a lie, brilliant. It's so clever. I can't actually, it's one of those twists where you actually think, oh, bloody hell, that is it. And it's so clever, and it didn't even dawn on me until it happened. And I wanted to applaud, so well done for that. The mid-game twist is fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. The end-game twist is really dumb. Really, really dumb.
So stupid.
It's the stupidest thing. The true game ended to the Forgotten City. So stupid. I almost love it because it's so dumb.
I do actually love it because it's fucking stupid. And it's fine. For some reason, I don't know. They worked so hard on building up some seriously, like, really impressive intrigue through this game. As you said, that twist in the middle is bloody genius. I when that happened, I was sat on my sofa and I was just like, oh shit, like it's so good anyway. But then even past that, you start to uncover elements of this city that are just, again, so clever, and it's building, and then it just goes fucking nuts. and I just think it's so good. I just absolutely love it. I think it's just wonderfully stupid.
It built up enough goodwill for me to like it. It is really dumb, though. I can't stress how dumb it is. It's just preposterous. I could only hope they were writing it laughing as they did it. Because if they weren't, then I have no clue what they were trying to achieve. But if they were, then it worked in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, it has a lot of very fun, ask a lot of questions of a philosophical nature all the way through. It's always teasing and poking those sort of questions to you. It talks big about religion, talks big about nationality and citizenship and stateship. There's a lot of things going on here, which it has fairly interesting things to say. I mean, it's not the most detailed and in-depth look at some of these subjects I've ever seen in my life, but it's fun enough. And for a video game, Christ, is leaps and bounds ahead of most things. I mean, you know, unless you're in like a Shin Megami Tensei game, which is just all philosophy. You know, this is about as close as you're going to get to something like that. So that was a lot of fun as well. I like this game quite a bit. There are things I'm not hugely fond of. It's a little janky. You know, it's very much beholden to its source code. And Skyrim's a bit janky, so therefore this is a little bit janky. That's unfortunate. There is an element of sometimes you know what you need to do and you know where you need to go and you just can't for whatever reason. You've got to jump through a certain hoop to get the hoop to work. It don't happen often, so that's fine. I'm not a huge fan of the fact that once something does go wrong and a sin is committed and everything turns to black and goes to hell, and that's cool the very first time, and you have to run back to this loop to start your loop again. Tell you what, it really starts to suck by the A49 time. You're just like, oh God, can I just get to the loop? Do I need to run all the way back through the map to get back to where I am? It's not a big deal because it's so hard to die in this game, and it's not the world's biggest map, so it doesn't take you too long to do. But at times you do just feel like, Christ, can I skip this bit as well and just start again? But these are pretty minor complaints, you know. They're not, you know, deal breakers by any means. And for most of my time with the Forgotten City, which lasts all of, I'd say, about 7 to 8 hours, depending on if you're trying to get all the endings. And I did, because, you know, you might as well. It's very, very fun. A lot of twists, a lot of turns, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say a quick defense of the part where the game goes to shit after a sin's been committed. I would say that obviously, yeah, you know, you do end up over the course of the game doing quite a lot of runs back to the point where you walk back and you know that hasn't happened yet, sort of thing. But one thing without going into too many like tips for players, because you really want to experience as much of Forgotten City as possible, I actually quite like that section of time because, you know, I guess a small hint is once a sin's been committed, you can commit all the sins you want before you get back in that time portal. So it's actually in its own right another part of the game because you can actually maybe do a bit more discovery or detective work on your way to leaving the time loop before you start the next one because, you know, you ain't going to blow up the loop anyway because it's already done. So it's like there's something to be done with that. You know, if I was going to go into my old man yells at Cloud persona, I would say that they could have tweaked the volume down on the dialogue when the sin gets committed. It's about 10 decibels louder than the rest of the game. But other than that, I'm pretty happy with it. But yeah, look, I just agree with everything you said, man. I think this is really cool. I do think the writing is all really good. There's some, you know, there's limited sections in this game where you are trying to persuade people to kind of, you know, go with your way of thinking on stuff. And it's one of the better games I've seen do that. I actually think that not only are the kind of points of the conversation genuinely quite interesting and you're touching on, as you kind of said, like religion and philosophy to an extent, it's also just quite, it feels like the conversations play out quite naturally. You can't anger these people and they just kind of don't want to go your way and they tell you to fuck off. You know, it all fits quite well. There's no like number next to it saying like 100% chance of success if you do this persuasion thing. You know, it's not based on stats or anything. It's just based on making the right arguments to these people to you know, persuade them. And I really like that. Obviously, it comes with the added help that this is a time loop game. So if you completely screw up a persuasion thing that you really wanted to do on that run, you can just, you know, do a sin, get back in the portal and off you go and try again. So it's all, you know, maybe there's less risk to it. Maybe that helps them. But yeah, I just think it's really good stuff. I mean, I'm really high on this one. I was kind of toying between an 8 and a 9 for this, but I'm going to go ahead and give this a 9 out of 10. I think it's a fantastic piece of work. I mean, again, I often shout out like small development teams because I make games myself and I'm, you know, I make games on my own sometimes and they're shit. That's why none of us play them. And this was made by 3 people, like 3 bloody people. That's insane. Like it's so, so impressive. This is far beyond almost anything I've seen with that kind of team count. It's incredible.
Yeah, no, I think the work they've done here is incredibly impressive. I've always toying between a very high 7 and a very low 8 for this game. It's always where it's sort of placed for me. Ultimately, I think the actual ending is too stupid. And it did sour me, to be fair. I found it funny, but I also thought it was just stupid. So I ultimately came in at a very high 7. I played a game this month called Little Nightmares 2, which I described to you as the worst 7 of the year. The Forgotten City is the second best 7 of the year. And to find out what is the best 7, do tune into the Pixel Mix Game of the Year awards at the end of the year.
I like how you've already accepted that you're like a 7 out of 10 game will make your list for that.
It definitely will.
Oh, you love to see it.
Okay, let's move on to our final game this month, and it's the big one. It's the granddaddy these days of motor racing video games. It's Forza Horizon 5, the 5th installment in the open world racing game, where the racing is basically the worst part of it. This time we find ourselves in Mexico, which is a pretty stunning, beautiful location, gorgeously rendered on the Xbox Series consoles. What did you make of this one, though? Now, we know it's going to be good because there's not yet been a bad Forza Horizon game. Where does this stack up amongst the rest of them against Australia, England, and all the bloody others?
Yeah, look, I mean, right, Forza, like we'll go back to 3. Beyond that, they're obviously getting a bit older, but, you know, Forza Horizon 3, Australia, fantastic game, bunch of stunning landmarks to go around, you know, great world to explore. Very, you know, 9 out of 10 game. Then you go to Forza Horizon 4, which is set here, it's set in the UK. I adore Forza Horizon 4. That obviously brought in the seasons with the different weather effects. And there's just something magical about seeing the most mundane things in your own country in a game with that fidelity for the first time. You know, like, I don't know, I genuinely popped when I saw, like, fucking road signs in Forza Horizon 4. I was like, that's the road signs we see on the roads. Like, it's just a strange, unique thing. Nobody makes games this beautiful set in an open world, like, English road. So, love that. That's another 9 out of 10 game. It's stunning. You know, it was better than Forza Horizon 3. And now Forza Horizon 5 is out and it's better than Forza Horizon 4. It's the way this goes. It's the way the pattern always goes. I'll always selfishly miss Horizon 4 because it is a very homely place. There's some kind of, you know, there's some landmarks in that game that are like about 15 minutes drive from my parents' house. It's really strange and cool to see. So I'll miss that, but there's no denying that Horizon 5 just once again takes everything that Horizon is and just cranks everything up by another level. I mean, this is the most beautiful video game that exists, for starters. I don't think there's a comparison there, you know, like, especially because of the size and scope of it, you know, like, you might get some stunning visuals in, I don't know, I mean, it's a PS4 game, but I often go back to God of War, you know, like, God of War still looks breathtaking, but a lot of it is quite contained scenes. This is like a big fuck-off piece of Mexico, and it all at times looks like real, like photorealistic. It's unbelievably beautiful. The driving and handling of these cars is, I mean, Forza's been nailing this for well over a decade now. You know, it's been the leader in sort of this perfect little balance between arcade and simulation driving. I think Forza is a simulation as, it's as close simulation as about 99% of gamers ever want to get. You know, I think it absolutely nails that exact amount of simulation. And you can tweak things, obviously. You can turn off traction controls and anti-lock braking and all that shit. Like, don't, you'll suck, but you can. But, you know, I think the default settings are exactly right for the vast majority of people to just love driving these cars around, even if they don't give a shit about cars and driving, which I tend not to, really. Like, I just think it's incredibly fun to explore. The map in this one is so much more diverse. You know, as much as I do love the UK and I love Forza Horizon 4, in this Mexico setting, you go between absolutely just anything. You know, you'll be in like some like jungles or like an ancient temple looking area. Then all of a sudden there's deserts, there's mountains, there's like thriving little kind of village type towns and cities that are like full of like winding pathways. And, you know, you look at the map and you can't even tell how to get on some roads because they're all up and under different areas. It's wonderful to try and figure that out and explore it. So, you know, the diversity in the map is the best that Forza Horizon's ever had. So you add that to the best visuals they've ever had, and also, you know, realistically the same driving controls, but they were already perfect in the other games. And you've just got an absolutely breathtaking experience here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Forza Horizon series just continues to iterate upon itself, and that's all it needs to do. I mean, you know, wholesale revolution may be needed eventually, but at this point in the lifespan of the series, I don't think it is. Mexico is a fantastic destination for this game. As you said, there's so much biodiversity in the places which you race around and travel around just on the open world map. That is a real joy to discover. You are constantly going through different sorts of terrain, and there's different places to go to. The UK version of Forza Horizon is lovely, but it is a little samey. It is a little bit rolling green fields quite a lot of the time, because that's a lot of what the UK is. So, you know, Mexico is a much more vibrant, exciting destination. I was initially sold on it, but it's very much won me over after my, I must have put about 20 to 25 hours into this game now at this point, because it's very, very addictive. I think another thing that it does well, as you say, the controls of the cars is just absolutely spot on. There's a little bit of back end swinging out, which can be somewhat frustrating, but that's just, you got to learn how to deal with it, manage it like you would in any game. As you say, it's not quite a simulation. It's not quite an arcade racer. A lot of people would say it's the most arcade racer we have, but it's not, for me, an arcade racing game. It's not even close.
No,
so it kind of sits in that nice little middle area right there, and that's all it needs to do, I think. I think if it went too far the other way, it would maybe lose some of its charm of feeling like an actual realistic, you know, trip around this area. You know, you do feel like you're actually behind the wheel of a car exploring as much as you are anything else, because I said at the top that the racing is the worst part of Forza Horizon, and it still is. Like, actually, the actual racing of the tracks, it's all fine, it's fun, it's good, but ultimately what I want to do is drive around roads, smashing billboards, doing big jumps, doing all that sort of stuff. And that's all here still, and as good as it's ever been.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing with Forza Horizon, right? It's why, you know, I'm not that interested in Forza Motorsport, because that's just the racing aspect of this game with none of the rest of it. Like, I'm not that bothered. You know, it is fundamentally sound, if not fundamentally perfect, but it's everything else that's so much fun in this game. It's exploring that map. It's doing all the kind of wacky challenges, you know, and like in this game, for what it's worth, that is one place I think they've actually improved quite a lot. Like, for anyone who's played one of the last few Horizon games, the typical route these games go down is you win some races or you smash some signs to get experience. And then after you've done that for a while, you unlock a showcase event. And showcase events, for people who don't know, are always these absolutely mad, just cinematic kind of set pieces they put together where you'll just race something like ludicrous. Like, I think there's a UK one where you race like an old steam train, and it's just like, you know, it's great. Or you're racing like a giant hover boat, or I mean, there's even a Halo mission where you're in a warthog and you have to like, yeah, do. I don't know if that was the Australia game though, but nonetheless, there's stuff like that, you know, these big, really cool set pieces that are set up perfectly. And those are in Horizon 5, but what I think they've done a great job of here is for the first time, you actually, there's more variety there. Like, you get points and you unlock a thing you want to do, but it's not always just a big showpiece event. You can unlock an entire new area of the festival, or you can unlock like a chain of missions where maybe you're going to be like a test driver doing some stunt driving, or like you're exploring these ancient temples or something. There's one where you climb up a volcano under the guise of going to get some samples, but really it's just an excuse to put you at the top of a volcano so you can bomb down it. Like, they've really put some work into actually adding a lot more content around those fun show pieces. You know, there's kind of events that are almost at that stature now that sit below them, which really helps to not just feel like you're grinding out pointless races until you reach the showcase, which is kind of what I did in older Horizon games. You know, I'd sometimes be somewhat irritated that I just had to do another kind of generic race. You know, I didn't want to. I wanted to just keep doing fun stuff. And I think Horizon 5 is the best Horizon comfortably for continuing to give you fun stuff to do.
Yeah, I think it works to the game's strength. The idea of locking certain aspects of its game behind these progress meters. You know, if you want to do off-road racing, you need to unlock it. Until then, you're going to be stuck just driving on roads on the whole. If you want to unlock all the stunt jumps, you need to put points into getting that first. You need to make your decision as to what kind of Forza game you want right now. And I think that's a pretty good way of doing it. As you say, it kind of gives a little bit more momentum to the actual progression in this game. It doesn't feel quite so random anymore. Mm. You're actively making it happen. The showcase events in this game, I played for all of them, are as good as they were in all the past games. There's an element of diminishing returns. I will say, you know, you race against a train in this one, for example. You know, I did that in the last game, you know. But at the same time, there's only so many things you can race against. And part of the joy is the ridiculous slow-mo sequences where everything is lined up perfectly on the screen and you're basically designed to win it by 1/100th of a second on the straight finishing line. All the same as it was in Horizon, still satisfying. Will it still be satisfying in future games? I don't know. But for me at the moment, it still currently is. I love the addition of all these mini stories, which you mentioned. As you say, you've got a woman who's looking to find her old grandfather's Volkswagen Beetle, which she used to drive around the town with him. You know, you're restoring it and you're souping it up and you're doing fun tricks and missions with that. There's one where you face off against a street racing crew who are just a bunch of pricks and you need to beat them one by one. Now, there's a lot going on here. There's one where you become a wrestler, bizarrely, and you have to do a load of wrestling in Kai. You have to do like a load of tricks and stunts to like win his approval. It's ridiculously silly, but I like them. They give a little bit more flair and personality to the regions, and there's a lot more dialogue in this game than there ever was before. Your actual character speaks now as well, which means he interacts with people, and so it's not just him being spoken to as it was in the past games, which is again a good change on the whole. Don't get me wrong, the dialogue is really inane. Like, it's really inane. Forza Horizon is a strange game because it's clearly designed to be aimed at very young people. So all the glitz and glamour of it, everyone's pulling weird dance moves, everyone's pointing at face, everyone's having a bloody good time. And I'm just like, God, why is everyone so bloody yod. It's so strange. It's such an odd sensation for an older man like I am, seemingly now. But it's okay. It's just window dressing on the whole. It doesn't really change much of the core game experience. I like a lot of what it's done with this. I genuinely do. I was a little bit surprised they locked the stunt jumps behind a section of the festival, because that's the last thing I unlocked. And I spent the entire game going, God, there's not many of these stunt jumps. There's only three. And then I finally unlocked them. It just filled the bloody map. And I was like, oh, yeah, there they are. Okay. I just got cracking and had a bloody good time with it.
Yeah, look, I would say I've kind of got two like, well, one small downside and one kind of larger one here for Forza Horizon 5. The first one is related to those stunt jumps, because I think it's a mistake to lock that particular part of the game behind a challenge thing, because I don't know, for me, like you look at the map and you look at the options that you can unlock when you get enough points to unlock a new area, and they don't sound particularly enticing. You know, you've got all these big ones like, oh, Horizon like Wild, Horizon like Baja, you know, all this dirt racing, cross country, go and explore a temple, street racing circuit. Those are all the ones that look exciting. Then at the bottom, you've got this little Horizon kind of PR stunt section, which I think I unlocked that with about my eighth point. So I did loads of other stuff first. But that unlocks a ton of stuff on the map that you kind of wish you were driving past for the whole bloody game. You know, all of a sudden now you've drove around half of Mexico and you've only just unlocked like speed traps on the middle of roads that you've drove past at really fast speeds already, like 6 hours ago. And, you know, like drift sections that you would have tried to complete as you drove around. So like, I think that's a mistake. I think that particular side of the game should have just been on the map from the top, because it's now annoying to me that I've drove for so long and I probably would have completed about 40 of those challenges naturally, and they just weren't on the map. So I think, you know, for anyone who hasn't played Horizon 5 yet, or you've just started, do put a point in that PR stunt mode section really early. Just get a point in it and get it on the map, because it will save you a lot of hassle later on. But yeah, they should have maybe put that in by default. Now, my second issue with Horizon 5, and this is probably my biggest one, you know, we've already touched on that the racing is the worst part of a Horizon game, and it kind of is. And I think what it is for me that I struggle with the racing is I don't like in Horizon how any race you choose to do, whether it's a dirt race, cross country, street racing, you know, a big giant 25 minute monster race around the whole island, you just pick any bloody car you want. And I feel like that really de-incentivizes you towards playing, frankly, anything other than like an S2 supercar, because the races are the same length, no matter if you drive them in like some McLaren, like, you know, monster car, or if you drive it in a 1940s Jeep, you know, it's the same exact length. So you're just wasting your time if you pick a slower car. So you kind of feel like you're pushed into driving supercars. And for me personally, I don't think that's the most fun way to play Forza. I think Forza is at its most fun when you're playing cars in the kind of A, B class range. You know, you're quick, but there's more nuance to it. You know, you can like rely on corners and drifting and all that kind of stuff to get ahead of the competition. You're not just blasting down a road at 200 miles an hour and then hammering on some insanely overly effective brakes because you're in a supercar and then just jetting up to full speed again. I actually think it gets in the way of a lot of the enjoyment of Forza if you stick only to those cars. So I would have really liked them to make the races locked to certain like class levels or car types. I just think that just makes people play with more stuff and try different cars out and different systems out. You know, like some races you could lock to maybe just a single model of car, and you've got to earn that car and own that car before you can even do it. I just think that helps. I think that makes it a hell of a lot more interesting rather than this current system where you can just constantly use your absolute best car for the whole game. Because you'll be given a supercar in the first 10 minutes of this game, which makes about 400 of the cars in the game basically irrelevant. And I don't know, that's always stuck out at me with Horizon for a good few years now, and it's still a problem here.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, because as you said, the variety, part of the reason the racing isn't so much fun is because the variety is not there. You are essentially just going to pick that same car, quickly drive around the streets, and although the track designs are fun, they're never going to be as good as an actual built track. Yeah. You know, it could be just by the nature of the open world, it needs to, you know, be drivable normally. It can't be constantly curving and moving around. So they can be a little bland track designs. And if you're just doing it in the same car over and over again, the roads you've already been on, then yeah, that's why I tend to not do that many of them, because, you know, there's just no incentive to me to ever stray beyond what I've already got. I unlocked a Forza Legendary car, which is like a 998 supercar on like my 10th wheel spin. And that's all I've driven for pretty much the whole game, because why would I not? Like, there was no reason for me to pick up a, you know, a crap little D-range car and throw that around the corner. So they might as well not be there. There's all these cars which might as well not be there. And that's a shame. I know that races will drop to the level of whatever car you pick. So it's basically saying, if you want to do it yourself. But force me into it. Make me bloody do it. Come up with some fun ideas. I always loved those races in old racing games. We've got like 8 Beetles on the track and you had to, you know, race against all of them. That was fun. I like doing stuff like that. I mean, that's something that Gran Turismo actually does a little bit better than Forza. So it forces you into those sort of races a lot more.
Yeah.
So I think that's something to work on for future games. A couple of issues, minor ones. I've never been a huge fan of the drift mechanic in Forza games. I don't think it quite works well enough. Maybe it's because I'm so used to arcade drifting that I can't get my hand and my head around it. Whatever happens, all the drift zones, I can't get anything beyond 1 star. I just can't physically do it. For whatever reason, it does not click for me, and it's not clicked for me for 3 games now. So I don't think it's going to anytime soon. That's where a more arcadey sensibility would appeal to me, and it's just not going to come. So that's frustrating. And I also think the radio stations, for a game which is about a massive musical car festival, I always think the music stations are a little bit drab in Forza games. I know it's the best choice of music. I think it's fairly bland. A lot of the stations are incredibly similar to one another. The genre overlap is fairly high. They're not particularly distinct, and a lot of the songs are fairly bland songs which were fairly cheap to buy, and so not hugely exciting. I love driving around to the classical station, for example, because it's just a ridiculously stupid thing to do. But there's only about 7 or 8 actual classical piece scores here to actually listen to. And why? Most of this is royalty free. Like, it does not take much to get more in. So I don't really understand why that is either. The DJ banter is a little bit bland as well. Dialogue in general in this game is bland. It needs to improve. And that's my main worry for that Fable game, is that these guys can't write dialogue. So they're going to need to bloody well try and learn to write a dialogue-driven RPG.
Yeah, I think to give Playground some credit, I very much imagine they've staffed up the writing team from the team used for Forza Horizon. They probably didn't need a big writing team for this. So I imagine Fable's going to have a bigger team on that. But yeah, look, I agree, man. I think the music stations, they frustrate me in Forza Horizon, because I want to listen to the radio stations, you know, like maybe if you see this more, like if it was like a GTA game, you know, the standout for radio stations in all of gaming, you know, I'd love to like pop that on, you know, I'm not saying they're going to have a great talk show radio station, because we know they can't do writing yet, but you know, even just the kind of the candor in GTA stations and the music selection is always just really enjoyable. And it actually does, you know, eventually you're going to turn it off because you will have heard enough of it, but it would get me through like 10 or 20 hours of playing that, like a GTA game with the radio on. I always enjoyed it. And this, I don't know, man, I'm finding myself flipping over to radio off, or as you said, classic, because it's almost like a classic you can get away with. It's almost just like white noise in a way, you know, it's just comfortable, you know? So I sometimes put that on too, but the other ones I was done within God, half an hour. I just had no interest in them. As you said, the announcers on them are just obnoxious and just, you know, just start talking about your character or the festival in general. And they're just, it just sucks. I just hate it. Just shut up. And the track lists are incredibly like, there's like Horizon Pulse, Horizon like Bass, Horizon Block Party, exactly the same music is on those, like the same types of music. There's no different like vibes to any of them, really. You've got a rock station. I don't like a lot of the songs in it, but that at least is rock music. And you've got the classics that stands out too, but the rest of them might as well just be a mess of just anything that all is on the same stations. It's just pointless. And I don't know. Like Forza is obviously a big moneymaker now. It's doing well. I think they can afford to maybe ramp those up a bit, you know, bring in some really good music and maybe spend a bit more time on the production values on that side. Because, yeah, it's, as I said, I'm pushing for the radio off button almost all the time now.
Which is never a good time. I mean, the Dirt series does quite well with radio and dialogue and banter.
Yeah.
I'd suggest Playground maybe look at hiring some of Codemaster's staff, because they do it quite well. While I'm complaining, I actually think the multiplayer suites in this game are very good but cumbersome to get into and have always felt very cumbersome to get to. You need to drive to a point, then you need to wait at that point. Jumping quickly into a race in Forza is a little bit miserable. And maybe that should improve because it's such a collaborative, community-driven game as well. There's so many different... You can create your own custom tracks, and a lot of people have done, and some of them are very good. A lot of them actually have more of the actual... force you into locked situations than the actual game does. So the clearly players have realised that's something that the game could probably do with. And I just feel, beyond the community elements, actually getting into races a little bit cumbersome, a little bit awkward, could be a bit better. I don't really play these games for multiplayer anyway. I just wanted to get a couple of achievements, and it just dragged it out even longer than I wanted it to. But that's just me. That's fine. Ultimately, what you have here, though, is just another big, gorgeous open world pack full of stuff to do. Probably too much stuff to do, but what can you do? That's open world games.
Yeah, that's what we do now.
The markers are just obnoxiously too many. Like, it almost puts me off. I turn a lot of them off and I just pick certain things at a time, and it's a little bit more bearable. But I feel like I'm complaining a lot about Forza Horizon 5 because I actually still think there's places to improve this series. And I hope that Playground do in the next iteration and do take it forward. But it's still a remarkably good racing game, which does so much right. I've pumped 25 hours into it with little complaints to have at all. I think it's still completely at the top of its field for this sort of in-between simulation arcade racing game, and I don't see a competitor coming towards it anytime soon.
Yeah, look, I'm the same as you. I think you end up having to complain quite a lot when you review a game like this because, you know, it's obviously, it's got a pedigree now, right? Horizon 3 and 4 have both been near perfect as well. So it's like, you know, you kind of acknowledge that this game is also near perfect and then have to talk about the things that aren't quite there yet. So, yeah, I certainly, you know, I'm massively high on this game. I think it's incredible, you know, but these are the little bits and pieces that I'd like to see improved. You know, I agree with you on the multiplayer stuff. I think it's a little clunky. I also think it's frustrating sometimes when, you know, the map is so packed full of stuff and sometimes they'll just throw like timed multiplayer stuff on the map. And it's not always clear that that's what it is. And like, you know, if you're just trying to play single player, like one of the big massive events showed up on my map yesterday that it turned out I hadn't actually unlocked it yet, but I thought I had because it was just there on the map and I drove to it. And then I realized it was like just, it was only there for like a multiplayer challenge. It wasn't part of my single player mode stuff yet. And like, I don't know, that's a bit messy, a bit annoying. But yeah, these are all really small problems in the grand scheme of things. This is the best racing game that exists. It is the best looking game that exists. You know, it's really doing almost everything perfect. So, you know, I mean, I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10. I think I gave Horizon 4 a 9 and 3 a 9 as well. I do think this series has potential to grab that 10 in its next entry, you know, if they just tighten up these few elements. But right now, this is the best racing you're going to get. So, yeah, fantastic game.
Yeah, if you're a fan of the racing genre, this is the best racing game you can play at the moment. There's none better than it. I still believe it is a 9 out of 10 game. I feel as well like you, it could become a 10 if it fixes these niggles and it takes a bit of a leap forward in certain elements of its game design. It could also regress badly if it just keeps being too familiar. There is an element of familiarity with this game, which is hard to shake. Like, you know, this is the fifth entry now, and I'm starting to feel like I've done it. So yeah, there's two ways this franchise can go, and Playground need to be clever about it now. They need to be very smart in how they move this franchise forward, because eventually you are going to get to the situation where you just go, well, it's almost like an Ubisoft game.
Yep.
And you kind of need to avoid that. So at this point, I'm still okay with it. It's not a problem for me, but there's definitely potential for this franchise to progress in the future. But this is not that installment. This is still a 9 out of 10 video game and a damn good one to play.
Right then, well, that is the end of our Games of the Month special for November. So next time on Games of the Month, we will be obviously covering the big games from December, of which there is one. That is basically going to be an episode probably mainly framed around the campaign for Halo Infinite. We'll probably also take a look at some backlog titles we're getting to as well. You know, maybe some that aren't going to make our Game of the Year list, but are still well worth mentioning because we will have a big Game of the Year show coming up at the end of the year. So it should be a lot of fun stuff on that one. Some good little games to try out. But next week on Pixel Mix, we are back to Mini Console Madness. And we finally drew a game that we actually feel like playing. You know, could it be a better racing game than Forza Horizon 5? That remains to be seen. But it is Super Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. So we are going to be winning us some 150cc cups on that this week. And I'm looking forward to talking about some Mario Kart.
I always look forward to talking about the Mario Kart. Oh, love me some Mario Kart.
Yep, going to be good stuff, man. But anyway, yeah, so until next time, if you want to catch us on social media, you can find us at Pixel Mix Pod. If you want to drop us an email about any of the games that come up on the show or anything that's coming up in the next few episodes, then find us at pixelmixpod@gmail.com. So until next time, I am Andy Wood.
And I'm Josh Stevenson.
And we will catch you next week.
Good luck finding a good song from Forza Horizon 5.
I'll try.
I will plot and scheme. Mario.